Welcome to Anxious Ramblings. Here we're going to speak about all the crazy thoughts in your head that you're afraid to say out loud. Hi everyone. This week's podcast will cover avoidance. So I want you to think about something. Next time you feel like an event's going to cause you anxiety, you feel like something is going to make you anxious or depressed or sad or angry, just avoid it. Don't go to it. Don't go to the event. Don't do anything. Just stay in your room. Watch Netflix and get some tea and just avoid it. I'm actually just kidding. I don't want you to do that. And yes, I love my Netflix and tea nights, but avoiding things that are going to cause you any type of discomfort isn't healthy. And I realized that when my anxiety was really bad, that was definitely something that I was doing a lot. Like, I would not hang out with friends and not go out as much. I would, miss lectures that they had, like, extra credit lectures on campus that I really wanted to go to, but I knew it was going to cause me anxiety, so I was like, no, I'm not going to go. And I remember one time I, postponed my jury duty. And avoiding things may seem like, okay, this is going to be the best thing for me to do, but at the end of the day, it's really not, because you're going to have to leave the house someday. You can't. You have to put yourself in these situations. And if you think about it, anxiety and fear, avoidance, they are ways to protect yourself for something that you know is going to cause you harm. And if you really sit there and think about it, most of the time, the things that you avoid, you know, aren't going to be harmful. And avoidance is a way to protect yourself right now and right here, but in the long run, it's not beneficial to your mental health. So that is where agoraphobia comes in. So agoraphobia, so many people associate it with the fear of open spaces and also the fear of being somewhere where you can't escape. Like, if you go too far from your home and you're not able to get back really quickly, people with agoraphobia tend to get panicky and nervous, and they just want to leave wherever they're at and go home. And also, they fear having panic attacks in social situations, so most of the time people with agoraphobia can't even leave their house. And I feel like I've dealt with a lot of that when my anxiety was really bad, when I'd be on my way to class and all of a sudden I just panic out of nowhere and I just turn back around and go back home, because I don't want to be in those situations. I want to be in my house, on my bed, watching Netflix with my tea. And that was definitely the wrong way to go about it. And one thing that I learned is that the more you avoid these situations, the more fearful that they will become. So let's say you challenge it and you let the anxiety happen instead of running away from it. The more you face that, the easier it will become, and the less and less anxiety will ruin it. Like, for example, I was in the fall, I had a hard time being on subways and being on the bus, and I remember getting off the bus on my way to school almost every day, and I'd be late for class because as soon as I panicked, I would just get off the bus. And I realized that, okay, I couldn't miss class, I still have to go, so why don't I just sit there, face the anxiety, face the fears, maybe put on some music, or just let the anxiety happen instead of running away from it. The more I did that, the easier taking the bus became. And I feel like another way I did this was, so being on campus really caused me the most anxiety, and now I'm doing a community service fellowship where I live on campus. I feel like this is definitely a way to face my anxiety, because I know that this is where I had the most anxiety, but now I'm here living on campus. And I know it's a summer, so there's not many students around, but I feel like this was definitely a really big challenge for me. And for me to be able to do this, I'm really proud of myself for that. And I wouldn't have done that unless I really faced my anxiety. And a lot of this is really the goal of exposure therapy. Exposure therapy helps to reduce a person's fear and anxiety with the ultimate goal of eliminating avoidant behavior and increasing quality of life. So people who go through exposure therapy basically confront their fears, confront their anxieties, and Exposure therapy gives you a way to challenge your thoughts in certain situations and learn that over time these anxieties and fears will lessen because you are exposed to it and you know how to handle it and you know how they feel. I feel like a lot of times we were, I was scared of these anxiety symptoms that I was getting because I didn't know what they were. But now that I know that, okay, it's anxiety, I'm less scared of it. I can sit there and go through it and not be afraid. And I know sometimes, like, the heart palpitations for me are a really big thing, and that is one thing that's really scary. I know it's caused by my anxiety, but it's one thing that I'm still having trouble with. But, like, everything else, like, if I have a racing heartbeat, I just let it happen and just remember to tell myself that anxiety is harmless. And it's just a way of my body trying to protect me. And exposure therapy is really great for... I haven't really had, any official exposure therapy, but I've just been doing it on my own, exposing myself, leaving my comfort zone every day. If you leave your comfort zone a little by little every day, you realize that your comfort zone becomes greater and there's a greater space of comfort that you are able to explore. You're not going to be just confined to your bedroom and exposure therapy is really great to help you with that because it really pushes your boundaries. And I feel like this was the most beneficial thing that I've learned right now in my recovery. I just wanted to add that, just so you guys know, everything that I suggest or say is just based on my personal experience with anxiety and with having a mental illness. And, you know, I'm not a professional, so this is not meant to be any sort of medical advice. And I just wanted to let you guys know that. It's just things that, based on my personal experiences, that I felt like that was really helpful to my recovery. And I just wanted to share that. For the second half of this episode, I'm going to play you a conversation I had with a friend of mine named Philip. He's in his 30s. He has generalized anxiety disorder with agoraphobia. And I just want to say thank you to Philip for allowing me to share his story, and I hope you guys enjoy it. When did you experience your first panic attack?
That was 2002. I was driving through some mountains with some friends, and I never really liked the mountains that much, but I never had a problem with them. But we were driving through, and we had stopped at this little lookout in this canyon just to get out of the car for a little bit, and I remember getting out of the car and just walking like 10 feet from the car, and all of a sudden I just felt like scared. I thought I was going to die, and I didn't know why. I didn't know what was going on, and so I rushed back to the car. I told my friend that was driving, I said, "You got to get me out of here. Get me home." Like, that was probably my exact words, "Get me home."
So describe some of the symptoms you feel when you get the panic attacks.
Let's see. There's I get chest tightness, and I can feel it in my shoulders. Mm-hmm. And then just... my stomach is just gets in like knots, and I feel like I could throw up. I never have, but it feels like that. And then I just feel kind of dizzy, and I felt like, I don't know, it's almost kind of like tunnel vision, I guess. Mm-hmm. I just feel like everything just kind of gets dark to the side, if that makes sense. It's just like I can only focus. Usually, like, if I can read something in front of me, a magazine or a book, or look at my phone or something, and you can kind of make it a little bit better because I can just focus on something right in front of me. Mm-hmm. Outside, it's really hard because, you know, the open space, and that's where the agoraphobia comes in. I'm just, to me, it's all about just the open space.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else? Then sometimes just feel like I get kind of cold, and my limbs just feel like they're kind of numb. Mm-hmm. And there's like a couple of times, like, just like walking, I feel like I could collapse because my leg's not going to work. And usually it's just, it feels like it's just one side, which makes me think, oh God, that's a stroke.
Yeah.
You know, but I feel like, you know, like my hand won't work. I feel like I'm holding my phone in my hand. I feel like I could just drop it because my hand's not working. But it always does. You know, yeah. I'm always, if I'm gripping something, I'm holding it. Usually I'm holding it too tight. And it's just, but it feels like to me, you know, the muscles just get real tight, and then sometimes they're tight and they're numb at the same time. I don't know how that's possible. Maybe I'm just tightened too much.
Yeah, I've experienced a lot of the numbness too. Even last night, like my whole, like I get scared when it's like the left side, because it's like, oh, I'm gonna get a heart attack.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I get that too. Like my whole left, like my arm was just numb, and like my leg, and it was starting to get tingly, and like it was just, it's really scary sometimes.
Yeah.
So tell me about the first doctor that you went to after you had your panic attacks, and how that went.
The first one I went to, which was, it was like the week after that first panic attack. And I told him everything that had happened, going, you know, through the canyon and everything. And telling him how, you know, I felt sick, and I felt like I was going to throw up, and I felt like I was real scared and I was going to die. And his basic response was, well, you shouldn't feel like that.
Wow.
Nothing else, nothing, you know, didn't tell me, you know, well, you need to calm down. You should try meditating, you know, you should...
Mm-hmm.
You know, or you know, let's try putting you on this medicine. There, you know, there was nothing. It was just, you shouldn't feel like that.
That's crazy.
And yeah, not very reassuring.
Mm-hmm. That'll make me feel worse.
Yeah.
Right. And then you switched doctors and went to someone else and mm-hmm. prescribed medicine.
Yeah, so I switched doctors, and he said, well, you know, that's anxiety. At that point, my agoraphobia hadn't really developed yet, or wasn't that bad, so he didn't really diagnose that. It was just anxiety. So, yeah, he put me on some medicine, which has been so long, and I've been through so many, I don't remember what the first one was.
Mm-hmm.
But as with, you know, all the medicines, it seems like they'd prescribe something, and I'd take it for a while, and then I'd feel better. And then it seemed like it stopped working, and so I'd go back to them, and they'd increase the dosage. And that would help a little bit for a while, but then it would stop working again. And so they would just keep increasing the dosage until it got to the point where they weren't comfortable with that level of dosage, so they'd switch to something else.
Mm-hmm.
And that went all through. I mean, it was probably 10 different medications.
Oh, wow.
Up to Xanax was the last one.
Mm-hmm.
And the Xanax, that I really felt like that was what pushed me over the edge. Agoraphobia wise,
mm-hmm.
because before, because there's like some sensations and just the being scared of the space. I didn't really have that before the Xanax. I had a fear of, you know, I didn't like traveling too far from home.
Yeah.
But I noticed there were weird different stuff that happened after taking Xanax for a while. So I remember calling my doctor and I was like, I gotta get off of this.
Right.
Because I told him, you know, I was having panic attacks all the time. And I was like, you know, I can have panic attacks without medicine. So
right.
let's do that. And so we worked out a plan for me to taper off the Xanax.
And so you said that meditation helps you the most out of everything?
Yeah. When I can make myself sit down and do it, and when I can get my brain to shut off. But yeah, I think overall it is... it's the best thing. I wish that, you know, they would teach meditation to everybody, starting in kindergarten.
I know.
Teach us meditation, so then by the time we're adults, we don't have to learn it. We know it. I think we'd be a lot better.
Exactly. It's like we don't, as adults, we don't know how to relax. And
yeah, yeah.
That's true. That if they taught it to us as kindergartners, we can grow up and go through all these different things. I'm like, all right, I'll do meditation, and I'll do whatever makes me relax. And that's a good point.
Yeah.
So tell me about the process for obtaining disability.
Disability. That was a long process. It took about 2 years to get. Finally get approved for it. When I lost my job, because my job moved out of town,
mm-hmm.
And I decided, you know, I wouldn't be able to make that trip every day. So I ended up losing my job, and that's when I applied for disability. And so they made me go through a bunch of different doctors, have different tests, and talk to different people and everything. And at first I was denied.
Mm-hmm.
So I kept going and trying to get it again. So then they set up a court date with the judge, and that was about after the 2 years. And by the time it got to that,
wow,
I had gone from being able to go out to the doctor's appointments to not being able to leave my house at all.
Wow.
And so I had to get them to set up a phone interview with the judge, which luckily they were, you know, nice enough to do. And the judge had a doctor with them, and they did a little interview, and I think it basically came down to the judge asked the doctor, you know, was there any job that I could work with this agoraphobia and panic and everything? And the doctor said no. And so I think that's basically what it came down to, and they finally approved it.
Wow.
But yeah, it took 2 years.
That's crazy.
Which, I mean, you know, I told you about had my parents helping me with bills during those 2 years.
Yeah.
So I was lucky enough to have that. If I didn't have somebody helping me with that, there's no way I would have made it through all that.
Exactly. That's, wow, 2 years. Have you ever experienced a stigma of mental illness, like working against you?
Mainly just with friends. At first, when I would have anxiety and I wouldn't want to do as much as I did before, you know, going out and just having, you know, go out and have panic attacks. So I kind of started avoiding situations, and that kind of made me lose some friends because I wasn't as fun as I was before.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, you know, it get to the point where you find out who your real friends are when they stop hanging around with you when you're going through something rough like that.
That's true. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I felt the same way with dealing with my friends.
I mean, there's been some, you know, my parents and my girlfriend, they've all been, you know, real good and real sympathetic and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, then there's others, you know, they're real sympathetic, but I feel like they don't understand, which you can't.
Yeah.
I think, and if you don't have this problem, you can't understand it. And sometimes I think, you know, well, I wish you could understand it, but also at the same time, I wouldn't wish this on anybody.
Yeah, me neither.
I wouldn't want anybody to have to go through it just so that they can understand what I'm going through.
Yes. I wouldn't wish this even on enemies or anything.
Yeah, exactly.
It's horrible. So where are you now with everything?
Right now, I'm still kind of, I guess, housebound.
Mm-hmm.
But I am working on exposure therapy, trying to get myself out. So I started with just getting in the car and driving around the block. And at first, that was all I could do. And it was just enough. I mean, it wore me out. It would take 5 minutes to drive around the block. But it felt like it was hours. And I remember looking at the clock, and it was like, you know, okay, it's 4:13, and I'm backing out of the driveway. And I would drive around the block, and I was thinking, well, I've been gone for 20, 30 minutes. And then it was like, it's 4:17. And I'm like, what?
That's crazy. that's what it feels like.
Yeah. It's like time slows down, and it just takes forever. But yeah, I've been doing that. I got to where I was going a little bit further. I could go to, there's a gas station like a half mile down the street from me.
Mm-hmm.
And I could drive there, and I could go in and you know, buy something, wait in line and buy something. And I was, you know, doing okay. Then I kind of got sick, and I was sick for about a week. And so I didn't go out, and I almost kind of felt like I lost that for a while. And then it was getting back in the car. It was almost like I was starting over.
Yeah.
So now I'm kind of back at the point where I drive around the block and waiting for, you know, and I've noticed that if I do it more, it gets a little easier. And so that's what I'm doing, just kind of trying to build it back up.
Okay, that sounds good. I'm glad you're actually trying again, because I know, like, when sometimes when people have, like, setbacks, it's like you just want to give in to that. But the more you expose yourself to, like, these seemingly harmful situations that you think is harmful, you end up realizing that you can do it. And each day you can go further.
What I told you from Claire Weeks, which I was paraphrasing, but you know, you grow more in setbacks than you do in times of peace.
Yep, I definitely agree with that.
So I'm going to end this podcast with some responses I got from a question I posted on my blog. The question is, how has your perception of mental illness changed now that you have one? For me, mental illness has always been something out there, something that didn't touch me or people near me. That's what I thought. It's something that you see in commercials for depression or in documentaries, but those aren't real. That's not something that really affected me. And then I realized that while before I thought of it as something that other people had, now I thought of it as something that's part of a regular struggle of everyday life. It's not something to be embarrassed about. It's not something that should be hidden. And in this way, maybe my anxiety has made me change for the better, and I guess I'm thankful for that. I know that depressed people aren't just lazy or lacking self-discipline like society wants you to believe, nor is it something that you can wish yourself out of or think happy thoughts to get rid of. And it doesn't just mean sadness. It can encompass despair, anger, irrational rage, apathy, and even wild manic moments. Also, it is perfectly possible for the depressed to smile and enjoy things while still being depressed. This does not mean that we're just making it all up or attention-seeking. My perception of mental illness has definitely changed me. I was always under the impression that mental illnesses were always either spot on and ate up every part of a person. I thought they ruined one life all at once. I now know that being diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder, that mental illnesses are not easy to spot on the inside. I also know that they're also controllable and they don't have to ruin one's life if you don't let it. So I'd like to end this podcast with some special thank you shoutouts. I'd like to thank my audio editor, Jean, the music composer, Elise, and also I'd like to thank Philip. And if anyone else has any more questions for Philip, he has an anxiety and agoraphobia blog, deathproofkahuna.tumblr.com. That is deathproofkahuna.tumblr.com. His email is also deathproofkahuna@gmail.com. I'd also like to thank my Tumblr followers and those who answered this week's question. The question for next week is, for those of you who take medication for your mental illness, what role does the medication play in your mental health? Is it more beneficial or detrimental? Also, if anyone has any questions for me or any suggestions for how to make this podcast better, you can email me at anxietysurvivor@gmail.com and you can find me on Twitter @anxioussurvivor. Thank you all for listening. Hope you all tune in next time.